Now please join us in the chalice lighting, the words for which can be found in your order of service. May the light of this chalice illuminate the truth. May the light of this chalice illuminate the path to justice. You'll forgive me for using this microphone today. My voice is almost gone again, so this microphone helps me out a bit. Our opening words this morning are from Reverend William Barber. What transcends our labels, our political alliances, and our situational ethics? Do justice. Echoed in every ripple of the great river of resistance. Treat people right. Treat communities right. Love mercy. Love helping people. Love building a government that cares for all. Love the least, the left out, the lost. Enjoy lifting those who have been abandoned. Get excited about rescuing those who have failed. And this, walk humbly before your God. Never think as a nation that your bombs, missiles, and weaponry make you greater than God. Never become a nation that's unable to repent when you have mistreated the vulnerable. Never become so arrogant in your wealth that you refuse to lift up the poor. Never become so vain that you pray for God to bless America and forget that God is not your exclusive property. Do justice, love mercy, walk humbly.
Global climate change is fundamentally a moral and ethical crisis induced and exacerbated by human activity that can and must be modified to maintain a livable world for ourselves, our descendants, and other species. Looming ecological catastrophes impacting food, water, and disease threaten the vulnerable and our descendants with mass suffering. If all known fossil fuels reserves are burned, they will produce 5 times the amount of greenhouse gas emissions required to raise the global temperature beyond 2 degrees centigrade, the level that leaders of 167 countries, including the United States, have agreed represents a threshold beyond which there would be dangerous human-caused interference with the climate system. We have a moral responsibility to the Earth, to all beings, and to future generations to do everything in our power to bring about a swift transition from fossil fuels to a sustainable energy economy.
I'm already struggling to make ends meet. Subsidizing a burgeoning sustainable energy industry sounds like a lot of extra money that I just can't afford to pay.
Given what I've heard about the environment, I doubt that we can do anything at this point. We have already passed the tipping point.
I'm sorry, what were you saying now?
Friends, a moment at your time. The recent attack at the Pulse nightclub in Florida, which took the lives of 49 people and injured 53 more, highlights an epidemic that claims 89 lives a day across the nation. Private citizens have no reason to have access to weapons like the MCX carbine firearm that the shooter used at the Pulse nightclub. These weapons have immense destructive power and do not belong in civilian hands. But this is just part of the problem. In addition to keeping such dangerous weapons out of civilian hands, we need to keep guns out of the hands of those already deemed illegal and inappropriate purchasers, expanding background checks to cover all gun sales, including gun shows, would help. These actions will not solve all the problems, but will go far to reduce them at this time.
I don't disagree with what you're telling us about the horrible situation. Is that right? No, it sounds like you have some good ideas. I just don't have the time to get involved.
Why are you people always trying to stir up trouble?
Say what now?
Friends, come over this way. Listen to what we must do about desperately needed reformation of the prison system in America. Surely you too recognize that we must reform our judicial system and establish drug courts that prescribe treatment rather than imprisonment, especially for the young or the first-time offender. We must develop effective alternatives to incarceration, like arbitration, meaningful community service, and appropriate mental health and substance abuse. Let me tell you about how our denomination, the Unitarian Universalists, we have a church of the larger fellowship, and we develop relationships between prison inmates and UU members, like me, on the outside. Why, my inmate's name is Chris Benson, and
they're prisons, aren't they? They should be miserable. And if a few people get a raw deal, who cares?
Hey, I don't disagree with what you're saying about the horrible situation in prisons. It sounds really terrible what you're telling us, but listen, Andrew's got asthma, little Sally's got nut allergies, I've got my own troubles.
Can you go over that again?
Muslims and others perceived as Muslims in the United States have faced increased levels of discrimination and hate crimes since 9/11. An additional layer of fear, prejudice, and xenophobia have arisen following the Paris and San Bernardino terrorist attacks in 2015 and the Belgium and Orlando attacks in 2016. And some politicians have unnecessarily called for a ban on immigration and increased surveillance for all Muslims following these events. The refugee crisis in Syria has become a target of this fear, prejudice, and xenophobia. We need to build bridges of partnership with Muslim neighbors, increase understanding of Islam through our communities, challenge the acts and words of Islamophobia in solidarity and in coordination with Muslims, and advocate in opposition to moves that would persecute or otherwise single out Muslim neighbors for unfair special scrutiny.
You know, this doesn't seem like a big problem to me. In college, I had a lot of Muslim friends. We got along just fine.
Oh, it's a big problem. But we need to think bigger. We need to build this solidarity with Muslims, African Americans, Asians, transgender people, and so many others. It would be bad to just focus on building solidarity with Muslims. We really should set up a series of 3 or 4 monthly cottage meetings about this to get some input and ideas before we move forward.
We each have worthy concerns crying out for justice, concerns crying out for justice. But what we've seen this morning's skit is that only a fusion coalition representing all the people of conscience in any place can push forward a moral agenda over the interests of the powerful. Only a coalition of joining together through the recognition of our common concerns can unite us as an effective maker of change. If all 5 of us spoke together as one, called for environmental justice, called for reasonable gun control, called for prison justice, and all 5 joined in solidarity with our Muslim neighbors, and for racial justice, and for economic justice, and all manner of anti-oppression interests, there just might be enough of us. Just might be enough of us to overcome the curmudgeons, the apathetic, the stingy, the pessimists, and the rest who stand in the way of making progress towards our now shared goals. May we today recognize the wisdom of joining together to make a real difference in our world, a world so in need of us. In a fusion coalition, the most directly affected members would always speak to the issue closest to their own hearts, but they would never speak alone. When workers speak up for the right to organize and engage in collective bargaining, the civil rights community would be there with them. And when civil rights leaders petition for the expansion of voting rights for people of color, white workers would stand with them. In this book, Reverend Barber outlined a number of steps necessary to foster fusion coalitions for justice. The most notable for me was the use of moral language to frame and critique public policy. Reverend Barber makes the point that this claims the higher ground in partisan debate by returning public discourse to our deepest moral and constitutional values. I feel that treating social justice work as moral dissent is a vital part. Often there are many ways to do things and many ways to think of things. Based on the personal and strictly objective measures, it is possible to build a function that demonstrates that immoral approaches are superior when the measures of the effect on people is averaged. The averaging of the metric obscures the offensiveness of the highest and lowest measurements. By ensuring that social justice work is firmly grounded in moral values, rationalizations can be confronted and focus can rightfully be redirected towards the impact on the most vulnerable members of our society. As a matter of fact, Reverend Barber underscores this by making clear that social justice work should be deliberate in lifting up the voices of those oppressed or otherwise impacted by immoral policies. They are the best moral witnesses. Reverend Barber also makes the point that the power from such a coalition comes from the relationships built. He relays stories from his experiences in North Carolina, where as a member of his coalition, he joined a woman from Planned Parenthood for a media interview on women's health. The interviewer asked Reverend Barber about voting rights, his top priority, but he was there that day to speak in the interest of women's health, and he told the interviewer that. As our society gets more polarized, fusion coalitions may be the hope progress has of overcoming what may become the innate default of stalemate and gridlock. Our myriad interests are interrelated, and practically speaking, our best hope for progress with regard to any of our concerns may be to join together in a strong, broad coalition of many different flavors of progressive interests.